Logos, MTV Entertainment Studios, Paramount. TV. Gunpowder and Sky.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Hello.
Daytime, footage of a crowded airport hall. MTV Entertainment Studios presents a Gunpowder and Sky production. Many fans knock on a van's window. The elevator door closes.
Jesus, Mary, I told you this is going to be crazy.
A Tamara Davis film. Lance Bass, NSYNC.
In all of Europe, there was this thing called boy band. Like, we never even heard that term yet. The Prowler were like, yes, we're a boy band. And then we slowly were like, oh, wait, that's a bad thing.
Nick Lachey, 98 Degrees.
Well, the term boy band was one that we were very hesitant to embrace early on. We never thought of ourselves as a boy band, at least in the conventional sense.
Donnie Wahlberg, New Kids on the Block.
I love boy bands. I'm proud to say I'm in a boy band. I fight for boy bands. I stick up for boy bands. I love touring with boy bands.
Lindsay Parker, Music Times.
What is a boy band? It's a weird term. A lot of bands that are called boy bands aren't bands in the true sense. Like, they don't play instruments. They dance. They're more from, like, kind of that Motown tradition of, like, the Temptations, the Four Tops. And then there are some that are actual full-on bands, like Jonas Brothers or Hanson.
We weren't put together. We were made together, right?
Yeah, yeah.
In the same womb. It's kind of gross.
It just got really
Taylor, Zach, and Isaac Hanson.
We've seen so many stories about boy bands. This is about the evolution.
It formulates who you are at such an important age.
Donny Osmond, The Osmonds.
The rivalry is what made it huge. Just this nonstop battle.
When you think it can't get bigger, it gets bigger.
John Norris, MTV News.
K-pop really is the center of the boy band universe at this moment in time.
I'm sure they looked at what happened in Orlando, Florida, but took it to the next level.
Vernon, 17.
If I state the obvious, everything that's happening in our lives, none of it will be possible without our fans.
The boy band is something that only can exist in response to the wishes of teenage girls.
Lori Majewski.
When you're in a boy band, the main subject is the girl. And you're saying things to the girl, I want to be with you. I want to hold your hand. Quit playing games with my heart. They're singing straight to the girls.
We would not be who we are without the fans.
The power has always been in the young girl.
It was the dynamic of the little girls created every boy band in existence.
Title, Larger Than Life, Reign of the Boy Bands.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles!
I will never forget the feeling, the excitement, how magical it was when Ed Sullivan introduced them.
The Beatles, who are kind of considered the original boy band, formed in the mid-50s.
I heard about them through a lad who was asking for a record by them in one of my stores.
The Beatles were then just four lads on that rather dimly lit stage. I was immediately struck by their music, their beat, their sense of humor, actually, on stage. And even afterwards, when I met them, I was struck again by their personal charm.
He approached them and offered to be their manager. He had no management experience.
He believed that if marketed and presented and done in the right way, the Beatles could be bigger than Elvis.
Footage of an Elvis concert is displayed.
Elvis sort of showed the world what passionate fandom could look like.
With Elvis, you have this one guy you can like. But then the Beatles come out, and suddenly you have an option of four Elvises. You have four different archetypes. You can express your identity by deciding which one it is that you like the most.
He really believed that each individual member had something special and encouraged that and saw how different they were, but how when they came together, they created something special that was so much bigger than the sum of the parts.
Black and white footage of Beatles fans screaming.
Beatlemania was, that's what it was. It was Beatle and it was mania.
Have you ever been this crazy about any other entertainer?
No, and that's what's so amazing. We don't know why we're like this.
I think it's shock.
Ringo has a sexy nose.
Girls, fans discovered the Beatles.
It's flattering. You know, it's nice to think that people enjoy either what you're doing or the things you say. It's a good feeling.
And then, of course, all the merch started happening. People were buying Beatle wigs and, like, Beatle dolls and Beatles wristwatches. They stopped touring because of the exhaustion of the sheer intensity of this fandom.
Michael Bivins, New Edition.
The Beatles deserve all the credit in the world because they gave birth to so many boy band groups over the years.
The modern definition of the boy band, you guys really started, I'd say.
Not really. We came after New Edition. So for us, they're really the real blueprint of the modern day boy band.
The New Kids called us the original boy band. They keep it real. My name is Michael L. Bivins. That's B as in Boston, I, V as in Victor, I-N-S. When New Edition started, our inspirations were LTD, The Whispers.
Some video clips are displayed.
We did Heat Wave. And a lot of Jackson 5.
I first met the Jackson 5 when I had gone to work at Motown. And one of the artists, Bobby Taylor, he said, there's something you really need to see. So I went to his apartment, and there across his living room were these kids. They got up and they sang four songs a cappella, and I was, like, blown away. They were adorable, they were talented, and Berry Gordy described as the sound of young America. Not white America, not black America, but America, young America. He put the entire machinery of Motown behind them.
The way Berry Gordy would train his groups was like the Ford assembly line.
They had four number one records in a row. Stop the Love You Save, I Want You Back, ABC, and I'll Be There.
It spanned different age groups so that different girls across the country could identify with which one they liked. Was it Michael? Was it Jermaine? Was it Tito? But Michael was the heart and soul.
It was the first time that young black kids really had their version of Beatlemania. Once, we're coming down the stairs of the airplane at a dead run, are like 300 kids. And literally, we had to dive into the limo. We had decoy limousines, and we'd leave in a panel truck, and they'd still find us.
Tina Treadwell.
As a young person, musical groups were a big deal. Jackson 5 came up, and then there were the Osmonds. Yeah, one
bad apple don't spoil the whole... They came out with a number one record first, and then I don't remember how many months later, we came out with One Bad Apple.
And this record comes on, this song, and everybody stops because they think it's them. But it's called One Bad Apple by the Osmonds. You know, when a hush fell over Jerusalem in the car.
The One Bad Apple, our first number one record, was written for the Jackson 5. And they had turned it down, from what I understand. We got the song, and we got the number one record out from it. So I think they probably said, dang it, we should have gotten One Bad Apple. I started singing when I was 4, but professionally at 5. So by the time the Osmond Mania, as they called it, took place in 1970... I've been in the business a long time. The first show, we're dressed in these Elvis-type outfits. We have no idea what's about to happen. It was this moment. Blackout.
Footage of the concert is displayed.
We run on stage. Massive screams are taking place. I think to myself, as I look out, somebody's hurt.
somebody's, you know, they're screaming out, something's happened out there. And then I realized, they're screaming for us. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. I gotta do this the rest of my life. This was the beginning of the popularity of the Osmonds as a boy band. I would come to the edge of the stage and reach my hand down. A couple of girls would grab my wrist. And as soon as my brother Alan saw what was happening, he would grab me and pull. Two things went through my head. Alan, save me. Alan, let me go. I wanted so badly to have them pull me in the audience and just rip me apart.
The Osmonds, the Jacksons, those were the groups we looked up to coming up. That's the evolution of New Edition.
When you talk about boy bands and where they originated, of course you could say the Beatles, of course you could say the Jacksons, and then the Osmonds. But for me, it's New Edition without a doubt.
Ronnie, Bobby, Ricky, and Mike, if I love the girl, who cares who you like?
A video clip is displayed.
I was the DJ of Cape Cod at that point in time.
15 minutes on the right side at 11 o'clock. Time check it, if you will. I'm Johnny Wright, your conductor of this musical ride.
Johnny Wright.
And then all of a sudden, one night, the phone rings in the station, and it's Maurice Starr. And he says to me, I'm looking for 10 investors to invest $1,500 a piece, and I'm going to have a talent show in Boston. And the winner of that talent show, the money is going to be used to record a record. And that was kind of interesting to me.
The Hollywood Talent Night. I'll never forget it. In 1978, we wanted to be in talent shows to get the girls to scream and to get money and be popular right there in the projects in Boston. There was 82 groups. We went on at 2 o'clock. We were number 15. That show went all the way to 11:30 at night, and we lost. We came in second place. But Maurice said, you know what? I'm still going to give you guys the recording contract to make the demo. He allowed us to come in second place and turned us into winners.
A picture of the group is displayed.
Our first single, Candy Girl, is what I refer to as a monster. When you can come out the gate and blow it out the water, it's huge.
Their latest single on the Streetwise label entitled Candy Girl, New Edition.
It was Ralph Tresvant, myself, Bobby Brown, Ronnie DeVoe, and Ricky Bell. Our inspiration was the Jackson 5. But Maurice Starr added a twist to the boy band. We put the rap in there.
She walks so fast, she looks so sweet. She makes my heart, I just get the big.
Then you got Mr. Telephone Man.
Mr. Telephone Man, there's something wrong with my life.
Now, with Bobby Brown as the lead, we knew each song would have a different voice. We wanted to make sure each member had a role. Are you smiling? Are you doing the pelvic thrust like Bobby? Or are you pop-locking like Ralph? Or are you Ricky, you know, tipping your hat? Who are you as an individual?
All of their videos were targeted towards teen and tween girls. They knew exactly what they were doing. Maurice Starr, genius.
I'm the man to get the job done.
Unfortunately, in this business, contracts have to be right. And first contract is never going to be in your favor.
When we separated from Maurice, we had some things we had to work out.
It was very hurtful. I quit the business for about 2 weeks. And I say to myself after 2 weeks, I'm not a quitter. So let's get up and get this thing going. Now I'm going to put 5 young white kids together.
They are what the Beatles were to us. New Kids on the Block!
Several shots of the group are displayed.
The New Kids experience, I think, was something that not a lot of people really saw coming. These 5 white dudes mixing R&B and a little bit of hip-hop.
When New Kids were formed, Maurice Starr was looking for anybody that could sing, dance, and rap. You know, Maurice almost got arrested for driving around schools looking for young white kids. I love breakdancing, I love rapping, Run DMC.
It's street to rock around, to rock around. Time is tricky.
It was New Edition, Run DMC, and that was my thing. And when I met Maurice, I was the perfect guy in the perfect place at the perfect time. Maurice probably saved my life. I was bused to school in Boston, one block from where New Edition grew up, in Orchard Park. And when I would go to school, I would look out the school window and I could see where they lived. These famous guys from Boston lived right there, and they made anything seem possible to me. And literally within a year of that, I was meeting their former producer, Maurice Starr, and creating the New Kids on the Block together. My brother Mark was originally the only other member of New Kids with me in my boy band. When he left, I brought in my friends. You know, Jordan Knight, Jonathan Knight, Danny Wood were my schoolmates.
We all went to school together from sixth grade on up. And then Donnie was the first one to get in the group, and he kind of
brought you all together.
Archetypes of boy bands is hilarious, and it's really New Kids that kind of started that.
Donnie was the bad boy. Jordan was the matinee idol. Danny was the workout sports kid. John was the sensitive kid. And you had that in Backstreet Boys, and you have that in NSYNC.
Justin was the young heartthrob. Chris was the crazy one. I was, you know, like the shy one. And then you read it so many times, you just started falling into that trope. And then you started feeling like, well, this isn't me, but this is what people want.
And that's because all us girls have a different type. Some of us just want the eye candy. Some of us want the one we could have a deep conversation with. Some of us want the one that'll make us laugh.
And I was the quote-unquote bad boy. Yeah, I'm the biggest pushover in the world. I have not a bad bone in my body.
No, I don't think I was ever a bad boy. I'm good. It was just really trying to find myself and deal with all the fame and craziness, but also stick up for myself and my friends.
And then sometimes you had the little Donny Osmond, Michael Jackson type.
We needed a Michael Jackson, Donny Osmond type little guy policing, and just because the crowd really responds to that, and we found Joe.
Joey McIntyre had that sound, and it was just great.
We decided, let's get a young guy. And that was kind of a group decision with Maurice. Joey McIntyre was a godsend.
So from there, I went to every major label with New Kids, but they just didn't get it. They were like, they're a bunch of kids, no talent. They told me to get out of the building, don't come back.
We played in prisons, high schools, birthday parties, parks. We played in barrooms that we were too young to be in. We played everywhere.
So I said, let me go instead of through the back door, through the black door. So New Kids was signed to the African American division of CBS.
How do you feel about being dubbed the White New Edition or the Osmonds?
We're not the White New Edition. We're not the Osmonds. We're the New Kids on the Block.
And the first album flopped.
I think this concept of people hearing the New Kids, thinking it's New Edition or the Jacksons, and then seeing these Irish kids pop up, that was like a strategy in the old days. And I think the record company tried it. I think it didn't work.
But their second album started to take off. And The Right Stuff became that big dance record.
You got it. The Right Stuff.
Lucky. A DJ took a chance on us and played our record, and it found its audience. And that's what made it go.
I was technically the tour manager. So then Maurice called me and said, hey, we have this opportunity to go out with this pop girl Tiffany as her opening act.
I'm Tiffany. I sing a song called I Think We're Alone Now. I'm known as the pop princess from the malls.
Much like the one DJ who played our record, we were very fortunate that Tiffany herself personally advocated for us to be her opening act. Suddenly we walked out and they saw us. Nobody knew what was going to happen. Nobody knew.
Kids on the Block performs for a large crowd.
The teen twin bill of the summer has hit town. Tiffany and New Kids on the Block.
I started hanging out with Jonathan.
Pictures of Tiffany alongside Jonathan are displayed.
But it produced a little bit of a rift because a lot of my female fans wanted to, you know, be with him.
It has to be. One of these days we're going to get together.
So they're the opening act of her tour. And the DJ said, are you ready for New Kids on the Block? And the place went crazy. And then they're like, are you ready for Tiffany? And all of a sudden, you could start to hear boos in the crowd. And we're like, wait, what's going on here?
When we would be on tour, the fans are screaming, yell at me, call me names, pull my hair. I was shocked. The girls were very tough.
So Tiffany ended up becoming the opening act of her own tour. And New Kids on the Block were the headliners.
A video clip of the group is displayed. Van Toffler, MTV executive.
I came to MTV around 1986. It was mostly random music video rotations. And then the videos they liked, we ran 50 times a week. The fans were the most insane for New Kids on the Block.
New Kids on the Block are awesome. I love them. They're great dancers. I thought it was the best thing I ever saw, ever.
The fan base for a boy band is, like, crazy.
Ivy Blake, playwright, Fangirls.
What is a fangirl? Well, according to the dictionary, the Merriam-Webster dictionary, a fangirl is a girl or a woman who is an extremely or overly enthusiastic fan of someone or something.
They just have so much style. They have a lot of charisma, great bodies, great faces, just everything.
It means to love something without fear or apology.
The tweens and the early teens, it's a really special time because most girls don't have a boyfriend yet. And their boyfriend is often the person that sings their favorite song.
You're really great, guy, Donnie. You care for your fans and you're really understanding, and I'd love to meet you one day, hopefully soon.
People have such a misconstrued idea of what it means to be a fan of something.
It is the first time that they're experienced what is the meaning of love, crushes, you know, attraction.
That's what boy bands offer them, a first chance to suffer a first crush.
For all the girls out there, you can attack me.
They are the most successful piece in the common thread from the Beatles all the way to K-pop. Because without the young girl, there's no screen, there's no audience, there's really no poster. The lyrics don't have no one to sing to.
If that's the only price we have to pay is having girls chase us around the streets, then I'll pay that price for another 10 years, you know.
I was there, and it was a phenomenon.
We questioned whether we really deserve this level of success. You're comparing us to the Beatles? You know, we're just a boy band.
After just 2 weeks, they've got the number one album in the country, the number one single, and the hottest video in the country, too.
Step by step.
With the Step by Step album, these guys were like a money train.
Step by Step Around the World sold about 6 million plus records. Just that song, that single.
Step by Step.
The boy band's merchandise is displayed.
At that point in time, we were hawking things. So I would go, hey, don't forget that at the stands out there, we got brand new Kids on the Block merchandise. And then there was the 900 numbers where they were charging you $2 a minute.
Hi, we're the New Kids on the Block.
Now you can hang up with us 24 hours a day on our brand new hotline.
Just pick up your phone and call.
And in the first year that they were doing that, we had 2 million phone calls. And so they're making a ton of money.
I never thought it was too much product. I was sitting back thanking God that these millions were flowing in.
Eventually, I think they were just kind of burnt out. It was not about the music anymore. It was about the marketing, and they didn't like that.
The success was so much, and we were grateful for it, and we also struggled with it. having people constantly screaming and yelling and people carrying my luggage for me and turning on a light switch for me. When all of it stopped, I looked in the mirror at myself and I saw Donnie Wahlberg at 18 looking back. I hadn't grown in a lot of ways. At some point, we just needed to kind of grow as human beings.
A tour bus drives down a road.
In the meantime, this guy, Lou Pearlman, who was cousins with Art Garfunkel, had a plane business called Transcontinental.
One day a week, we would charter a plane and fly home because we missed being home in Boston. And allegedly, we chartered a plane that belonged to this guy, Lou Pearlman. And he said, wow, who are these teenagers chartering my plane? How can they afford this? And he said, oh, wow, I want to do that. Allegedly. And I don't even know if he owned the airplane.
People kept saying to me, there's this guy, Lou Pearlman, that's trying to get in touch with you. And I'm like, for what? And he goes, he's got a boy band he wants to talk to you about.
Backstreet Boys.
Backstreet's back, all right.
A picture of the group is displayed.
Orlando, Florida. We call it O-Town. It was and still is to this day the United States boy band capital of the world.
Back then, a lot of talented kids went to Orlando trying to get cast at different studios. And so Orlando just had a lot of artists who were there.
Backstreet Boys were very much put together by this enterprising sort by the name of Lou Pearlman.
Good morning.
How you doing, Louie?
Down there in Orlando, he started doing audition after audition, and AJ was the first one to get picked for Backstreet Boys.
There was a thing in Orlando called the Blue Sheet, which was the classifieds for anyone in the entertainment circuit. I saw this headline, and I asked my mom if I could go for the audition. She's like, sure. And it was simple. Lou signed me on the spot, and that was it.
AJ McLean.
Then we started generating a bunch of auditions. Next, Lou hired Howard Duro. Before Backstreet Boys, he went under a stage name, Tony Donetti. He looks about as Italian as I look, I don't know what. Then Nick auditioned. He was 12. Nick had a contract potentially for the Mickey Mouse Club. His mom asked him, you want to do this? It's a $75,000 contract, or take a chance on this group that might go nowhere. I think he made the right decision.
What's up? What do you think,
and then we got Kevin. Kevin was working at Disney.
Kevin Richardson was the oldest guy in the group. He was kind of the business guy.
And then we were trying to find a fifth, and Kevin kept talking about this cousin he's got. Brian was, I think, a junior in high school. And he's like, hey, y'all, I'm Brian Litcher. I'm Kevin's cousin. I was like, oh, good God, man, really? Two weeks later, we did Grad Night 93 at SeaWorld. It just clicked.
Mr. Lou Pearlman, the man who started it all.
Onward and upward.
Luke was a businessman entrepreneur first. Not a manager, doesn't know the music business, which is why he hired Johnny.
Right back at you, babe.
You go right back at
Johnny,
you.
Yeah, gotcha.
I was the tour manager for New Kids on the Block, and Lou Pearlman called me. So I ended up taking a meeting with him at an Italian restaurant. And this table was set up for like 14 people, and he was sitting on the end of it like the Godfather. All of a sudden, these five guys come walking in the room, and they're singing. And it was the Backstreet Boys, and the rest is history.
We have five very popular new guys here. It's called the Backstreet Boys, brand new group.
And then we connected with Clive Calder, who owned Jive Records.
Clive Calder, you said, there's a huge void for boy bands in America. And I was like, really? And he said, these guys are really good. Like, these guys can really sing. But at the time, the stock and trade of America was all about Nirvana and rap.
One, two, three, into the four. Snoop Doggy Dogg and Dr. Dre is at the dope.
Hey, wait, I gotta move on.
Even though
You had Pearl Jam, Nirvana, Snoop, Dre. We don't fit anywhere in that at all.
So there's an audience for young guys, but a younger female audience wasn't really being served in the early 90s.
So we said, you know what, let's take a shot, let's do this. And we signed the Backstreet Boys.
After we got signed to Jive, we met Max Martin, who would in turn become the staple of the Backstreet sound. Max looked like 80s hair band. His hair was down past his ass. We're looking at this guy like, he's gonna do pop music? Really? But Max created this sound with us that was completely different. That,
a picture of the group is displayed.
But Backstreet Boys couldn't get a hit in the U.S., so the label was going to drop them. So I said, look, right now, boy bands are kind of big in Germany. Let's send them over there.
In Europe, there was Boyzone, and there was Westlife, and there was E17, and all these other boy bands, and the most notable one would be Take That. Absolutely dominated UK music from the early 90s through 95, 96.
Pictures of the group on a trip.
So the label shipped us over to the Germany, Austria, Switzerland area, and we did a bunch of radio shows and all these festivals. We were the first American group to come over to Europe, and they just kind of slapped this word on us like, oh, it's a new boy band. But what we noticed was the groups over there were lip-syncing to their music. They never sang live. They couldn't do a cappella. And we did.
So one time, I went to Backstreet Boys, and I said, go out there and just sing a cappella to start.
Footage from a concert is displayed.
All of a sudden, the mouths of that audience just dropped. Like, what? These guys can really sing?
It was a very massive turning point for the industry to go, these boys can sing.
The Backstreet Boys sign autographs.
We got it going on. We're starting to move up to the charts in Europe. And one time, we came out to get on a bus. And there had to be 600 or 700 kids there. And they're jumping all over the bus. And that's finally when you kind of knew, like, all right, we're on to something here.
Three blonde boys walk down a street.
And then out of nowhere, Hanson came out. They blew up with Mbop.
Mbop comes out of nowhere, middle of nowhere being the name of the record, ironically, and it becomes number one.
Yes! We did it!
We were guys with long blonde hair that sort of looked like they were dressed like Nirvana, but they were playing Jackson 5.
I saw them perform. I said to them on the spot, oh, I really want to sign you and make a record.
Steve Greenberg.
I just felt like there was this desire for exactly this thing. Grunge was so male-oriented. It was music for dudes. And I felt like there was nothing for girls to really get excited about in pop music at that moment. We got them together with the Dust Brothers, who were hot producers at the time. They had just produced Beck's Odelay album.
The Dust Brothers had this culture around them of being DJs, being rhythm mixers, really loving those 70s records, loving those pop records, loving those Motown records. We had a common bond.
Once Hanson broke through the mold, they opened up the door.
Then Spice Girls came in with Wannabe. So I was like, hey, boys, it's time to come home.
An airplane lands at an airport.
We came back to the U.S. and released our single, Quit Playing Games.
A video clip is displayed.
Quit Playing Games with My Heart exploded off of the album, and that became their first real American hit.
Quit playing games with my heart. With my heart.
they get their first big MTV hit. Writhing and sexual, oh, baby, getting all soaking wet. This is not right. Let's stop this tonight. We love our boy banders soaking wet.
While we're on set, I was like, this is interesting. Like, Howie was all nip nip.
At MTV, we had really violent debates about what to play. I wish I could. It definitely didn't feel like my kind of music, but it felt like a genre that we have got to take notice of.
In our generation, you put out your first album, it does good, cool, but your second album is the one that's going to make or break your career. Ours was Millennium.
We can't wait to run in the store and go get Millennium. It's going to be the best CD ever.
In a store, Many Girls by the Backstreet Boys album.
But it wasn't really until we then released from the Millennium album, the single for I Want It That Way, that everything changed.
A video clip is displayed. Yeah.
The single, greatest boy band song of all time. The masterpiece that is I Want It That Way.
I want it that way. Tell me why.
Ain't nothing but a heartache.
Tell me why.
Ain't that video is so iconic. The blowing white shirts and the airplane hangar and all the fans screaming for them. That's such like a reference to the Beatles, with the fans kind of screaming and seeing them get off the plane.
People have analyzed its lyrics, and people don't really understand what it's saying.
I never want to hear you say, I want it that way. See, exactly. You're like, what? So they felt, this song doesn't make any sense. This isn't going to go anywhere.
So we then rewrote it so it made sense.
And that was, I love it when I hear you say, I want it that way. And the group didn't like it.
We're just like, it just doesn't hit right. So they put their faith in us that we made the right call, and we made the right call.
'Cause I want it that way.
We were 100% wrong. They were 100% right. The Backstreet Boys, they were masters of their own destiny.
But the next thing you know, I kept hearing rumblings from Orlando that someone else had another boy band.
NSYNC, a picture of the group is displayed. Chris Kirkpatrick.
Before NSYNC, way back in the very beginning, I lived in Orlando, Florida. I was in music class with this kid, Howie Duroux, and I remember him talking about he just auditioned for this band, the Backstreet Boys.
So then Chris Kirkpatrick decides to audition for Backstreet Boys, but he didn't make it.
So Howie makes it, and Chris Kirkpatrick, who was working at Universal at the time, singing and performing, he's like, well, I can sing just as good as Howie. I'm going to start a group myself. So that's when he called Lou Pearlman and said, hey, would you back us if I put a group together? And Lou's, sure, let's do this.
There's a lot going around that I auditioned from the Backstreet Boys and didn't make it, but that is definitely not true. I was introduced to Lou, and he's like, McDonald's works and Burger King works. You know, they're the same thing, but they're different. There's room for two. So he said, I want to start another band. And I was like, awesome.
Southern Charms Pageant, 1992.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Justin Randall Timberlake, and I'm from Millington, Tennessee.
So Chris Kirkpatrick, he called Justin Timberlake, and Justin said, look, I would love to do this, but I'm working with this guy, JC, who I did the Mickey Mouse Club with, and we're having a really fun time in the studio. Can he join the group? And Chris's like, sure.
Then we were out one night and ran into Joey.
JC was like, oh, I went to school with him. And Chris Kirkpatrick works at Universal Studios with him.
So we brought Joey into the band.
I was 16 when I got the call. And they were looking for a bass singer. And Justin said, oh, I'll call my vocal coach, and I bet you he'll know someone. And he said, yeah, the perfect guy is Lance Bass, but his mom will never let him do it. which I also would have thought. Justin and his mother call me. And I had heard of Justin's name because I loved the Mickey Mouse Club.
Justin.
JC.
Brittany. Ryan. Christina.
All of these kids became a part of the new Mickey Mouse Club.
So I'm like, well, let's go try it out.
A plane takes off, an aerial view of Orlando.
I go to Orlando. They picked me up in a Rolls Royce, and I thought that was just the coolest thing. Went to the house that the guys were living in, and immediately you just felt that connection. Those first few months, we all lived in a house together.
I was poor, so I was like, yeah, I'll live in the house. You know, whatever happens with this, I'll get free rent for a couple months, I'm in. And we recorded everything we did.
I had to learn very quickly how to have better rhythm, how to move a little differently. I was embarrassed. I'm like, they're going to kick me out of this group because I can't dance. I didn't know we were going to be a dancing group, but here we are.
Hello.
Hey, man.
Hey.
How's it going?
Welcome in.
How are you?
How you doing?
Good. I'm Jim Franco.
Johnny Wright.
But it wasn't until Johnny came on board that things really started happening.
Lou said, hey, listen, I'm going to try to bring in somebody now that I know that can take you to the next level. Johnny's taken New Kids. He's taken Backstreet. He's been around all this, so he knows the deal.
At the same time, Jan Boltz, who was the president of BMG in Germany, who had represented Backstreet Boys, said, if you have any other acts in the U.S. that are as good as them, let me know and I'll sign them. So I flew into Orlando to see this new boy band, NSYNC. And I'm not expecting anything great. And I see these five guys perform. And bang, my mouth dropped. And Jan Boltz goes, I'll sign the band, but I don't know. He goes, that Lance guy, how should I say it? He's a little feminine. And I was like, no, he's not feminine. He's sensitive. This is the unit. And we're not, you know, we're not changing anything. So finally he was like, fine, we'll just sign him.
So we got a record deal over in Munich, Germany.
Kurz nach der großen Pause schleichen die fünf Jungs von NSYNC.
And because we were an American group that was on the same label as Backstreet Boys, it got a lot of attention.
Joey! Chris! Hi, JC.
That felt like an overnight sensation. It didn't feel real.
But eventually, they were playing arenas in Germany.
NSYNC performs for a large crowd in an arena. The fans swarm a band with the group members.
This is why we love Berlin.
So about a year later, we brought NSYNC in. For whatever reason, the NSYNC album struggled.
They weren't really getting on the radio.
Sitting on a couch, Chris looks pensive.
But the tides turned when we did that Disney special.
Come on, we're NSYNC!
A poster is presented, NSYNC in concert. The group members walk the red carpet.
The Disney Channel had launched the In Concert series, and I was one of the architects of it. Now, Backstreet Boys was supposed to be on the show. At that point, they've gotten big.
Backstreet Boys were on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine. And the guys were like, why are we doing Disney? That's not who our audience is anymore.
Disney asked us to do the special, but we turned it down because we were just tapped out.
Now, I'm devastated. I need to find a replacement in 3 weeks. I was pitched NSYNC by RCA, and we said, okay, let's go.
Footage of NSYNC performing is displayed.
The special came out, and the world went crazy.
My favorite boy band is NSYNC!
They're hot.
They're gorgeous.
Lance has the intelligence, and Justin has the look.
I think there's an NSYNC boy for everyone out there.
You could just feel the change.
Several fans hold up signs for NSYNC.
Now, Disney special was their launching pad. And like overnight, they blew up.
Backstreet Boys were incensed, because then all of a sudden NSYNC was eclipsing them. And they're going to Johnny, like, how did this happen? He goes, it was yours. You turned it down. And by the time our special ended, NSYNC, they were platinum.
A video clip is displayed.
Here we go.
And then it was full speed ahead.
Here we go. One more time.
With NSYNC, it happened even faster than the Backstreet Boys, going from unknowns to this massive hysteria being chased around.
The group walks across a crowded hotel lobby.
The personalities of the two groups were different. There was something more genteel about Backstreet. Backstreet just felt a little bit more restrained.
Okay, guys, we got it right here.
Whereas NSYNC were just like, let's have fun.
Are we that immature?
Yeah, yeah.
Whoops.
Oh my God, you haven't seen the show? What is wrong?
They had a very party, you know, vibe.
The NSYNC members pose for a camera.
When they went into a studio, it felt like trying to herd five cats.
Backstreet Boys were kind of dark and mysterious. If we come into a hotel and there's 500 kids in the lobby, Backstreet would go in the back doors or underneath the garages. And NSYNC would still just walk through. Lance would stop and try to take pictures with 1,000 people. And at that time, the three biggest bands were Backstreet Boys, NSYNC. And then the third band was 98 Degrees.
With 98 Degrees, we never thought of ourselves as a boy band, at least in the conventional sense.
Nick Lachey, 98 Degrees.
And so we resisted big time the label of boy band. But then I think we got very aware of the fact that this was a movement that was happening, and we were probably lucky to get kind of swept up in it.
Jeff Timmons.
The plan originally for 98 Degrees was to sell us to the public as a true R&B group. We were heavily influenced by the group Boyz II Men.
Oh God, give me the reason. I'm down already.
But when our label saw the frenzy that was associated with boy bands, they thought, hey, we have our version of a pop group like this. So we were like, maybe it's not a bad idea. At the time, boy bands were all about dancing, and Lord knows we were not all about dancing.
We always joked that we were the non-dancing boy band. You know, we never auditioned. We never went through dance class. We put ourselves together. We moved to California. We sang for people. We got discovered. And then from there, we kind of got swept up in a whole nother thing.
Brittany Spanos.
This was a time that was completely shifting pop music for the next couple of decades.
MTV was a huge part of that.
MTV, to be honest, look, I don't work there anymore, so I can say this. They were resistant to really doing much with boy bands. And the news department was a little reluctant to get on board with covering them.
At the time, boy band had a totally negative connotation.
This boy band term, it was a way to make fun of a group. It was a way to explain a group had no talent without saying they have no talent.
I'm not no Miles Davis or nothing, but I know I'm good. I'll tell you that.
The perception is it's manufactured. But what band that signs to a record label isn't at that point becoming manufactured?
The bands like the Monkees were actually put together for television.
Under considerable attack from the critics about being a pre-packaged group.
It's pretty much the same way to form a group that anybody else forms a rock and roll group, whether it's John Lennon walking down the street asking Paul and Ringo and George to join him, or whether it's someone putting an ad in the paper. You've got to start somewhere.
So much of the criticism was leveled at boy bands, and ours in particular, because of the screaming fans. Everybody was so bothered by these female fans, and it was like, do they not have eyes and ears? Do they not have taste?
If those girls are reacting strongly to this, maybe we need to pay more attention to just how real and how authentic that is.
Watching how young people, and specifically young women, how much not only their voices matter, but their dollar matters.
And the marketplace had changed, and MTV went from hating to play boy bands, us, to relying on boy bands to stay financially viable.
We saw the research that the audience wanted to see colorful, beautiful, funny videos. There was a need for a program for kids when they get home from school in the afternoon. And TRL came out of that.
The studio of TRL in Times Square is presented.
TRL was fan-driven. We had the audience vote.
To you at home, if you want to vote for your favorite videos, you can. Call 800-DIAL-MTV.
It was interactive. Fans felt like they had a say. I've tried to explain it to my kids, like what it meant to that era of music and what it meant to that generation of kids. But if you were of a certain age, it was must-see TV.
Cuttis, MTV host.
What's up, Dan? Hey, it's Caduceo.
The fans really love being a part of it. People would have bets with their friends about who was going to end up number one in the countdown.
It gives the fans a way to show you, quantify, okay, which one is the biggest right now.
Every day, right when kids got home from school, there was our video on national TV, and then the Backstreet video, and the 98 Degrees video. And it was like, all right, who's going to be number one today?
It's been a battle all week long between the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC today. Unfortunately, NSYNC is at number two.
It fueled this giant energy of competition, and TRL was the gasoline.
Here are the Backstreet Boys with Shape of My Heart, the number one video in the country, taking us into the weekend.
Every video we put out, it was number one or number two, number one, number two, and then NSYNC came out, and then you had 98 Degrees. It was just this nonstop battle.
Keep it going. Here's 98 Degrees, This Gift. This is your seventh most requested video.
If any group told you they didn't want to be number one on the countdown, they were lying to you. I mean, of course you want to be number one. We took notice of where we were on the countdown every day.
98 Degrees prepares to go on stage.
The first time we went on TRL, it was almost like an overnight change.
Jeff, Drew, Nick, and Justin, won't you get out here?
We had gone from driving ourselves around in a Winnebago that we had wrapped to all of a sudden not being able to get out of the Winnebago. Literally fans everywhere, wherever we'd pull up. Fans would sneak on our tour bus, and we wouldn't even know they were there till the next city.
I'm sure it doesn't even come close to rivaling the Beatles, but it just felt special.
We'd ordered room service, and they were in the room service cart and popped out. Some things are a little bit too crazy to talk about.
Part of the reason we did TRL, too, we found out that the audience wanted to see themselves on TV.
My name's Debbie.
So we brought them all into the studio.
Those are especially selected studio audience.
It really cemented the connection between these boy bands and the fans.
Hey. What's up?
I think TRL was definitely the nail in the coffin for the fandoms to be at each other's throats.
It's my favorite one, pretty much, out of all of them.
I'm usually always bragging about them and how, like, great they are, because everyone's like, oh, NSYNC, it's like 98 Degrees. I'm like, no, Backstreet Boys, that's it.
We're either a team NSYNC or we're team Backstreet Boys, and you really couldn't be both.
Backstreet Boys!
Backstreet Boys!
NSYNC can dance. Backstreet's nothing compared to them. Look at this shirt.
Every boy band has to have that rivalry. You always got to have someone that the record labels is over-promoting against. New Edition's thorn in our butt was Menudo, a Spanish boy band.
A video clip is displayed. Hold Me, Menudo.
Menudo being the first Latin American band to come through. I was like, who are these guys? They were just so cute. There's like Ricky
Martin.
The big thing about Menudo was how they would replace the members as they got to a certain age.
The competition between the Osmonds and the Jackson 5 was real. We all had to have cartoons back in the day, and it played into this competition of the Jacksons and the Osmonds. Which one was the most popular cartoon?
The Beatles and the Rolling Stones.
The bigger the rivalry got, the bigger each band got.
When the NSYNC album came out, there was a concerted effort by the fans to buy 2, 3, 4 copies of the CD so they could have the biggest first week ever. Like, it was a rallying cry. They all come out because they want their group to be the biggest.
There's no real bitter rivalry between Backstreet and NSYNC. I think that it's just friendly competition, more or less than anything.
It was like a sport. And friendly competition is great, and I wish it would have stayed like that. I would have loved this to have been a Motown. You know, Motown back in the day, all the groups were signed together. They would tour with each other. They would do songs. It was a family affair. But with Transcon, it was not a family affair. At the beginning, I got to know a lot of people at Transcon because we weren't on the road. That's where I learned about the Backstreet Boys and if they were going to be mad that we were working with Johnny. And even at the record label, we were called B5 because they didn't want the boys to learn about us. So immediately we knew that there's some shady stuff going on there. And if I was the Backstreet Boys, I'd be pissed.
It's like, find your own identity.
I'd be so upset if you're secretly putting a group behind my back and not telling me about it. That means you know you're wrong. So I knew that they weren't going to be happy.
The Backstreet Boys airplane lands at an airport and the group members disembark.
So the Backstreet Boys were in Utah. So I fly up there and Howie says to me, hey, where you been? And I said, oh, I've been in Orlando getting things squared away with NSYNC. And he looks at me like, what do you mean NSYNC? And I said, yeah, NSYNC. I said, Lou told me that he told you that we signed him. He said, Lou didn't tell us that. I was like, what? He said, yeah. So a little bit later after that, Brian and Kevin come to my room and they knock on the door and they say to me, why did you lie to us? And I said, what are you talking about? He goes, Lou told us that he didn't sign him. He said, you signed him. And he showed us the contract with your signature on it. And so I'm like, oh my God, Lou. I had said to them, I said, look, it's a done deal. Both of you groups can survive. I said, I'll make this promise to you. I will never pit you against each other.
Lou and Johnny were like, okay, we're going to manage them as well to keep them out of your way, essentially. But they also got signed to the same label, got shipped over to Stockholm, just like us, worked with Max and Dennis, and it was literally a carbon copy.
Similar pictures of both groups are displayed.
They were upset. And I can understand that. They felt like we were the first. You went and got these second guys, so we feel like now you kind of betrayed us. It's like being in a relationship.
It got really funky, too, around our award shows.
Backstreet Boys, everybody.
When those bands were on together, we had to logistically plot their seating. They couldn't be near each other. At the height of Backstreet and NSYNC, it was a methodical system to keep them away from each other.
The reason Lou kept us apart was a byproduct of him not wanting us to speak, so we didn't figure out how horrible of a deal we've signed. If we would have known those guys and had real friendships with them and were able to discuss business, we would have figured out very quickly that we're all getting screwed. Everyone kind of has the same story. First deal's horrible. We got taken advantage of here, but people will still sign that contract.
Congratulations to the Backstreet Boys on this signing with Giant.
Because they know that sometimes that's the only way they can get their foot in the door.
Please welcome NSYNC.
And then after finding success, people think they can change it. You know, I can start here, but I know I can change that. It won't last forever. I can renegotiate. But when you sign a contract, especially teenagers sign these entertainment deals, they're ironclad. They're very, very hard to get out of.
Footage of the two groups performing is displayed.
Your first deal might be the worst deal you could ever have. Lou is taking the lion's share. Let's just say it's a dollar, and the band gets 15, he gets 85. Well, on top of that, he was a 1/6 member of the band. So he also got a piece out of their 15%.
He was the 1/6 member. Anything we got paid, anything we did, he got, even though he wasn't lifting a finger. And we were generating him so much money. It was crazy.
It wasn't until we got our first paycheck, you know, years later, and it just was not what we expected at all.
And they had these big checks made that I didn't know banks took. And they handed us the big check, and he's like, $10,000. And I looked at it. And I looked at Justin, and he looked at me, and I was like...
He mouthed something.
I can't believe we are rich.
Meanwhile, JC pulled me aside and said, you're rich. I'm like, yeah, I got $10,000. He goes, how much money did you make waiting tables at the Outback in a year? And I was like, oh, but, oh, now I get it.
Like, we're working for free for these guys.
The labels and managers that sign them and work with them often work them to the bone.
Guys, welcome. We don't want to keep you too long here because I know you want to warm up.
These bands were touted out on crazy schedules, year-long tours, produce an album while they're on tour, just be everywhere in the world at once, essentially, for just be everywhere with no breaks.
On tour, we do hundreds of shows a year, packing arenas.
We were just working.
Here's some of the passes throughout the year. They all look the same.
These boy bands, NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, 98 Degrees, they were the hardest working people I'd ever met.
They were on the biggest tours of that time. They were selling a million albums in a week, and they were coming back and they had no money at all.
It was a hell of a time for all of us. While we were doing the next album shoot, we hadn't had a title yet, and we decided to call it Black and Blue because we literally felt beat up by the label, just beat up in general. Eventually, we basically were like, okay, you know what? Let's just cut you a check, cut our losses. We're going to buy the name. You got to open up the doors and give us our stuff. And that was that.
When NSYNC came around, they were watching what was going on with Backstreet Boys and decided that they were going to do the same thing.
When you work for 3 years and have millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars coming in, we have power now, so let's renegotiate with the record label. Oh no, not even happening. Not even a discussion to renegotiate.
I went to Lou and I said, if you're not going to settle with NSYNC, then I have to step away from you and this battle is yours.
The kids should step back and say, how'd I get here? Who took the risk? Who put up all the money?
That's when we realized, this is going to be a fight. JC called his uncle, who was a lawyer, sent him the contract, and he was like, whoa, this is horrible. And he helped us find a little out in the contract that the Backstreet Boys did not have. And it was in the 9999 Video Music Awards.
TV Video Music Awards, live on stage from New York's Metropolitan Opera House.
And we were performing. And Jive Records comes to the show and they're like, we're going to sign you.
Barry Weiss.
I was overseeing both US and Canada for Jive Records at the time.
So how did you get NSYNC to come over?
We stole them. Yeah, we basically stole NSYNC. We said to Johnny, we'd like to have a meeting with you and the guys at NSYNC.
I had to be careful of what I did because we were still fighting with Lou.
And this was like enemy territory. I mean, we were the Backstreet Boys guys. But then Johnny was like, okay, let's go. We met the group that night after the show at a hotel conference room, talked about it, and we said, wow, these guys are great. We got to try to do this.
We were signing contracts there, and RCA was running down the traffic in Times Square to stop us from signing this contract because they finally realized that we were telling the truth.
A shot of Times Square at night.
But they didn't get there in time and sign with Jive. That felt good. We got our power back.
It was a good thing. I love Jive, but it was inside of me going, RCA worked hard for us. And now we're just saying, bye, bye, bye.
I remember we were in a cab talking about the new album and what we want to do and how it was so liberating and we're finally, you know, away from Lou and, you know, we're doing it ourselves this time. And Chris was like,
hey, what if we do like a Pinocchio thing? And what if we cut our strings and we say, like, we call it I Got No Strings?
And I'm like, no strings attached. And it just was born right there.
Everybody in the business knows you're only as good as your sophomore album. So here we are. This is our sophomore album, and we go, you know what? Let's leave our record company and do this completely different. I don't think any of us thought it would have worked like it did.
It's not about Lou Pearlman anymore. It's all about NSYNC. We sold 1,000,001 records in the first day.
A video clip is displayed.
I think every boy band has a sore spot in their career with somebody. The manager, the producer, the record label. I think it's just the nature of the beast, man. However, the Jacksons, the Osmonds, the talent was in the house. Then you have your manager, also in the same house.
The work ethic my father instilled in all of us was second to none. I remember as a tiny little kid, my brothers in front of that piano playing and learning the parts and harmonizing to where it was perfect. My dad was an Army sergeant. And so that kind of infiltrated in how he raised us. I never wanted to disappoint my father. When we hit big, Father said, back in the rehearsal hall, learn a new number. Keep this engine going. I think having a very strong father figure was very important for our success. However, it can go a little overboard. I spent a lot of time with Michael Jackson. I mean, you look at the Osmonds and the Jackson 5, the comparisons of the two family are just uncanny. There's 9 children in each family. Mike and I are both a 7th child of 9. Our mother's birthdays are on the same day. Michael and I are the same age.
You and I are in the same boat, really, you know?
Because we both sing with a group made of our own brothers, most of them older and one younger.
Right.
That's
right,
it?
Right.
We'd get together and we would just laugh and reminisce about the comparisons and the similarities. Michael said something to me one day and he said, Donnie, you're the only person on this planet that knows what my childhood was like.
A picture of young Michael Jackson next to his father is presented.
And Michael would tell me a lot of stories about Joe.
Joe Jackson.
I decided to deal with the boys as much as I possibly can as far as rehearsing them and getting them prepared to be in show business.
Did they resent it?
Yes.
Joe Jackson being their father who was the driving force. And you think what would have happened had that force been more loving? You know, would Michael have the difficulties that he might have had in his life? You have a kid who truly was robbed of his childhood.
You look at the dangers of show business in general, whether you're a single artist or a boy band. I don't know if I could have been able to survive show business if I didn't have my family.
A picture of the Osmond family is presented. Taylor, Zach, and Isaac Hansen.
Our story is highly influenced by our parents, but not in the Hollywood way. They saw that all three of us were getting a lot out of making music.
I remember Mom and Dad coming back from a date, and they were like, you guys didn't clean up the house.
You didn't do any
anything.
Of the things.
And then Taylor was like, yeah, but we wrote a song. And then my dad was like, well,
it
better be good. Yeah, how good is it? And so we sung the song. He goes, oh, that's pretty good.
That's worth no dishes. Forgiven. Now clean up the house.
Yeah, exactly.
Now
exactly.
Still do it.
When you see your kids doing something that seems productive and positive, you want to support it. We are proud to be in sort of the heritage of great bands that have brothers in them. The Bee Gees. I mean, come on. The singing. I mean, the Isley Brothers. Isley Brothers and their groove. The groove that was happening. Exactly. They're singing with their instruments.
In my room by the Beach
Boys. Oh, my God.
And there were three brothers in the Beach Boys.
With brothers in bands, oftentimes you get that sort of organic thing that you can't fabricate. It is like the closest thing you have to your own voice is your siblings.
Let us know when.
Whenever you're ready, this is just practice.
Cool. Hey, we're the Jonas Brothers. And you're supposed to talk.
I'm supposed to talk.
Jonas Brothers.
At one point in time, I wanted to go into the Christian music world. So I had an assistant who said, there's this young kid who signed to Columbia Records. His name is Nick Jonas. I saw him on a couple of things. The dad's a pastor, and they were eager to meet you. So I went to meet them, and Nick's brothers were his backup band. So I watched them perform, and they were great. So I became their manager.
A picture of Johnny with the Jonas Brothers is displayed.
And then Steve Greenberg, who was the originator of Hanson, took over Columbia Records.
In 2004, when I took the job, they gave me a pile of unreleased albums by acts that they were going to drop from the label. And then I hit this Christian pop album by a kid named Nicholas Jonas, and I was amazed. He sounded like Taylor Hanson. And I thought, wait a second, I want to meet this kid.
So he calls me and he goes, I saw that you're managing this kid named Nick Jonas. I don't really have a need for a Christian kid. So before I drop him, I just want you to tell me a little bit about him. And I said, well, if you're not moving forward in the Christian world, I saw him perform with his brothers. Maybe if I can convince the family that this is the thing to do, you could have the second coming of Hanson.
They came in and they played instruments. And I'm like, great, you're a band, you know? So I thought, I know how to do this, three brothers.
The album came out and that became the Jonas Brothers.
That first album had Year 3000.
Many fans hold up signs for the band.
And slowly but surely, we all fall in love with them.
TRL, show some love for the Jonas Brothers.
They enter TRL studio.
It's great. The Jonas Brothers were a rock band and kind of had a punk edge to them, but they also had a good boy Christian image.
What do you guys look for in a girl?
Somebody that our mom loves.
Yeah, they have to be the mom.
Important.
And her dad, of course.
I was obsessed with the Jonas Brothers just as much as her. Mm-hmm. We grew up on Disney Channel. The Jonas Brothers were very clean, like Hannah Montana, very clean.
Because you have to remember, with boy bands, it's family audience.
And because of that, there were some crazy boy band rules. And a lot of those rules I'd challenged from the beginning.
Record labels and management, it would always have these comparison stories.
We backstage!
Like the New Kids, Donnie would do da 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 da. And so you knew you were being told not to do this.
Nobody can have tattoos. Boom. You know, I'm like, all right, let me get some tattoos.
They would say, hey, shave your mustache. You know, hold on to your youth.
We can't be Fat Street. That is not cute.
Never have a drink in your hand or a cigarette.
Nobody can ride motorcycles. Boom. Bought a motorcycle, brought it on tour with me.
No girlfriends, because that will take away the dream of the fan.
Why don't you have a girlfriend?
Because I'm in too many places at one time.
And I'm like, screw you, I got a girlfriend now.
The Jonas Brothers, like, they weren't allowed to talk about sex.
With the Jonas Brothers, each one of them would wear a purity ring. And what we loved about the Christian aspect of it was, if you have a daughter who's coming to a show, she's not coming alone, so she's gonna bring a friend. And mom's not letting the two go by themselves, so either her or the dad comes. So for one fan, we sold three tickets.
They're literally going from the garage to stadiums.
This is the stage, it's 144 feet long. Every seat in the house is a good seat, and we are very happy because we owe that to our fans for bringing us to this place for sure.
2007 to like 2009, I would say, is their peak. And the internet was just becoming seen as a way to know your favorite celebrity. They would talk to you directly through their live streams.
Hey, what's up, everybody? We're the Jonas Brothers. I'm Nick.
I'm Kevin.
I'm Joe.
And you are on our MySpace page.
Pictures, blogs, everything. So check it out.
At that time, a lot of artists were still trying to figure out how to use social media.
I think probably the earliest best example of social media being used for getting your music and image, importantly, out there is Justin Bieber.
Bieber was able to grow from just doing a song on a street corner to being able to perform and sing and write, all because of YouTube.
The number of views and likes on a video grows exponentially.
At that point, YouTube had only been around for a few years. Even Facebook was pretty new, and Twitter was very new.
One of the first accounts for a boy band that I ever saw on Twitter was One Direction. But I don't think anyone saw One Direction coming.
No.
Hello.
Nice to meet you. What's your name?
I'm Harry Styles.
They all came to X Factor in 2010 and auditioned separately.
The first time I discovered One Direction, I was in my dorm room, I was surfing YouTube, and my life changed forever. I was like, who are they? What's happening here? And then it was rabbit hole.
One Direction. Amanda and Amber Miller, Fangirl Central.
And then in order to help them on X Factor, Twitter was this thing where you could tell everybody to just, like, support One Direction.
One Direction do not want to leave tonight. Call that number.
We see these like 15, 16-year-old boys shuffle onto that stage with like a heart full of hope, like hoping that their dream will happen for them. And you get to feel like a stakeholder in their dream.
And then the One Direction fandom spread on the internet worldwide.
We made a short film called The Day I Didn't Meet One Direction.
We've got 10 hours until concert. I will meet these boys today.
Discovering them on Twitter was like discovering a sovereign nation of teenage girls.
Twitter is what sent One Direction straight to the top. I mean, I had a One Direction fan account. That's where fangirls thrive. That's where we like get the information. Spreading the word, making sure that everyone knew exactly where they were at all times.
Where they were staying for the hotel. When their flight was landing, it was like, I saw Harry walking down the street. Harry was just seen in the guitar store, and we would run there. I swear One Direction fans are like the CIA. Like, we had eyes on them.
Several pictures of One Direction members with fans are displayed.
One Direction released 5 albums in 5 years. They went on tour every single year. They were recording their next album while touring.
It was album, promo, tour. Album, promo, tour. There was no breaks.
So it was just go, go, go. I think that was a lot of burnout.
Footage of several One Direction concerts is displayed.
And Zayn tragically left in the middle of a tour.
Breaking, Zayn has left One Direction. A watermelon explodes. A baby cries.
I remember. I sobbed. I cried all day because it was like, One Direction are the five. And I think if they had been given time to rest and breathe, they might have been together a lot longer.
Zayn Malik left the band One Direction, and this was a global news event.
Zayn Malik. He's shocking fans by walking away from one of the most popular bands in the world.
I think it was a combination of burnout, but also being like, I would like to be the first one to leave to like try to do a solo career.
Angle on Zayn.
When an artist is so entrenched in the history of a band and they break out solo, it's all about that first single. That first single is making a statement as to who they are as a solo artist. So you have to come out of the box with something big.
You think about the way that Michael Jackson's career went. He was at the forefront of the Jackson 5 for decades before becoming a solo artist.
At Motown 25, Michael wanted to perform Billie Jean, and it was out of this world.
That's when he did the moonwalk. It's a piece of music history.
I don't think any artist has ever hit the world stage with that kind of success. That was fuel. It changed the trajectory of Michael Jackson's career.
After New Edition, Bobby went out to coop first, and then Raul Tresvant, Johnny Gill went out to coop. Bell Biv DeVoe came last. It was natural possession. It was just growth spurts. It was just elbow room. You know, it was destiny. We went from a group to 4 entities who became platinum-selling artists. That was the success of us as solo artists. And look what it did. Bell Biv DeVoe created a different genre of how the boy band evolved from just the bubblegum style to the street style of hip-hop and R&B.
That girl is...
You had the infectious rhythm of Poison. You had that hardcore drum. You had a yak, da 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 band. It spawned a whole nother generation of an R&B group with a street appeal.
Let me give you Justin Timberlake.
With NSYNC, Justin exploded.
He is hotter than the surface of Mercury right now.
NSYNC was on fire. But they were out on a run for a long 4.5 years straight. So the conversation was, let's take 6 months off and then we'll regroup. And then Justin's point was, well, if there's going to be no group activity, I've got all this music. built up inside of me that I've been thinking about, I'm going to go work on a solo record. Within 5 weeks, he put the Justified album together. And based on the success of that record, MTV gave him a look for the first performance on the MTV Awards, came out in that boombox, and at that point, it was on.
Like I Love You, Justin dances on the VMA stage.
I think that there's always members of the band that feel that they could step up and go solo, whether they're successful or not. It's questionable. And usually you might get one, maybe two, but for everybody else, sometimes it's the end of the career.
The music business teaches you how to hold on, how to believe in yourself, but what it doesn't prepare you for is your downfall.
With Backstreet Boys, there was never a breakup, but 2001 was a really dark time. We had toured for 9 years straight, just go on tour, make an album, go on tour, make an album. And instead of dealing with my real emotions or my feelings, kind of got caught up in the lifestyle and the partying and the drinking and the drugs. And it wasn't until I did what I told myself I would never do, which was drink on stage. That's when I even had to know, like, okay, dude, something's not right. And the day that I flew from tour into rehab, everybody was just at their wit's end. And then Kevin left for 6 years to go start a family. And we gave him our blessing. He gave us his blessing to continue his four, and we kept going without him.
Footage of NSYNC performing is displayed.
2002 was our last tour. Justin was going to start his solo album, which we were super supportive of. I thought that was a great idea. The label told us, look, come back in 6 months, and we were supposed to go right into the next album. That just never happened. So it just phased out without any fanfare at all, with no goodbye. We just never got back together.
It was hard. There was a lot of animosity at first. There was a lot of anger. There was a lot of resentment. I remember thinking, are we ever getting back together again?
It was just a very confusing part of our life right there, because we didn't know what was happening.
From Justin's standpoint, when he's got the number one album in the country and he's got offers to tour the world, it's like, how do you come back to that? You know, I gotta fulfill this. It's not that I'm saying goodbye, it's just that I can't stop this.
And business-wise, I get that. Justin has the most talent in the world, and we wanted to give him that respect. But tell us that.
With One Direction, every member went solo, and every member had a top 10 record, which was absolutely amazing. And obviously, Harry's gone on to be Orbital.
Harry Styles has, at this point, a bigger solo career than One Direction's career was. He won a Grammy for Album of the Year.
Harry Styles!
Grammy Awards 2023.
The only boy band artists that have also done that would be Michael Jackson, Justin Timberlake, and George Michael.
Shit. This is so, so nice. Thank you very, very much.
Most boy bands, when a key member leaves, they don't continue on. It felt like the end of the boy band era.
But if you're a One Direction fan, you're probably a K-pop fan now.
The Western world realized that K-pop is something they can't ignore.
These groups tend to be anywhere from 4 to 13 members. And they come together to kind of make something that we've never sort of seen as a group.
We are here with BTS. I know the army out there is going crazy because we got the guys that are smooth like butter.
Yeah. Smooth like butter, like a criminal undercover.
I am not shocked at all that K-pop is the next boy band successor. They're beautiful, and they can sing beautifully and dance really beautifully.
With K-pop,
there's just this consistent theme of like marrying the old with the new. Like you can just see the influence of even like Michael Jackson.
Side by side, videos showcase Michael Jackson and BTS members dancing.
They are living, breathing, and sleeping music. And that's not that much different than what Berry Gordy did with Motown.
With K-pop, I'm sure they looked at what happened in Orlando, Florida, with training boy bands to dance, but took it to the next level.
Super 17.
It's great to kind of see that NSYNC Backstreet Boys style of choreography come alive in all these groups like BTS and 17.
17.
17 is the largest K-pop boy band operating right now with 13 members. And they have members who are Chinese, who have grown up in America, who are also Korean. And their last album sold like 5 million copies in its first week worldwide.
Vernon and Hoshi, 17.
Oh, hi, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. To me, 17 means lifelong youth.
17 is so interesting because they have 13 boys. And that just seems like a recipe for disaster, but they really have just made it work. Within the group, they have three subunits: the hip hop team, the performance team, and the vocal team.
You can tell their chemistry is real.
We just always try to have a good time, make it fun for each other. That's one of the perks of having all these members.
17, it's just all of these different personalities. So the fans have ample opportunity, a million options, like so many crushes.
Footage of 17 performing is displayed.
Even before I was able to dream about becoming a K-pop group singer, I was on my way back home after school, and this casting director approached me, and she asked me if I wanted to become a trainee as a K-pop group singer. And it just seemed like a fun opportunity.
A lot of 17's members were street cast, and then for a long time, they become trainees and learn how to dance and sing and like work as a group. Many K-pop groups live together for a long time in dorms.
I think every group should have to live together at the very beginning because you know immediately if you like them or not.
At the beginning, all 13 of us would be crammed into two vans we shared with the staff. That just drove us to work harder, push further.
Footage of 17 training.
Hoshi's video for Spider is a perfect example of the strength of the performance unit.
Seventeen released a collaboration with New Kids on the Block called Dirty Dancing. I think this is their way of sort of honoring them.
We're working with New Kids on the Block on a track titled Dirty Dancing.
Dirty Dancing이라는 노래를.
A video clip is displayed.
That song really resonated with people because, again, you know, it's a great boy band song. But also, I think people kind of saw the mutual respect between each other.
When I think back to my childhood, I could never have dreamed that we would influence anybody. They've become to the world what New Kids were 30-something years ago.
I think we're at a place we'd never imagined we'd be.
Visiting all these places around the world to see thousands of people that are there just for us, it feels very surreal. We didn't know what specifically would lead us to success, but having all these members as a group together, they make the journey enjoyable.
Fireworks close a 17 concert.
With 90 Degrees, the idea that we could share these incredible experiences together and was really like super meaningful. But sometimes when you're in a boy band, you go through really, really hard times. But that stuff, it makes you stronger. And I wouldn't change any of it. Whether it was personal stuff that one of us was going through, whether it was professional stuff, we did it together.
Your bandmates You'll struggle with them. Sometimes you'll even fight over something as dumb as who gets the blue shirt and who gets the orange one. But when you look into each other's eyes, you'll see something that no one else or very few people in the world will ever understand. We all share it. It's a very unique experience and it's pretty cool.
A picture of the Backstreet Boys is displayed.
We talk like family. We fight like family. We laugh like family. We cry like family.
I think of everyone in the group that changed the most, it would be me. I was the one that was hiding a huge part of myself. I wasn't the person that I was supposed to be. I became the shy one because I didn't want people to figure out the secret I had. I didn't want people to see that I had a personality, that, ooh, he might be gay.
Do you like girls who wear makeup, or do you have a limit on how much makeup you like a girl to wear?
Well, I mean, I don't like too much makeup. But, I mean, I like girls that like to keep themselves up.
I look back at my interviews 20 years ago, I'm like, who is that kid? Like, that is not me. It's just, I didn't know who I was. But then I remember towards the end that I could speak my voice. I became more confident. And everyone in the group always supported whatever I did, which is amazing looking at it now.
Lance smiles.
Do I believe that boy bands have created a beautiful, safe space for young people and specifically young women to find community and love something together? Yes, I do.
When I was in college, I was going through a really rough time. I didn't have a great experience. And like, at the end of the day, there was five boys that I could open my laptop and make me laugh. One Direction was my happy place. It kept me going.
At 17, I was in a place where, like, as a fangirl, sometimes you're ashamed of what you liked because the world tells you the things that teenage girls like are stupid.
Why is it that the image of a young girl at a Justin Bieber concert screaming her lungs out with ecstasy might be described as crazy, psycho, over the top, a bit much, but the same image, but make it a young boy at a sporting match, might be described as passionate, loyal, devoted. We'd say that's the love of the game.
Slow down. Let's take a breath. Ready?
What if we didn't undermine young women and their interests? What if we didn't allow ourselves to use this language that minimizes and belittles them expressing enthusiasm and love for the things they care about?
The fans of boy bands all get the last laugh. Their mothers, teachers, doctors, lawyers, politicians, they're in positions of power all over the country. Our fans have grown up to be the new gatekeepers.
The beauty of having young fans who grew up on your music is that they grow up with you.
We've been friends since we were in the third grade, and we used to wear t-shirts and go to the concerts together. And now, 15 years later, here we are wearing t-shirts, going to the concerts together. It's a very sentimental moment for us.
Boy bands can command this like intense loyalty that can really withstand the test of time.
For the boy bands who are willing to stick it out, you will last more than 2 or 3 years. And we're living proof, as are our idols, New Edition.
The girls who liked you when you were 12, those are the people that are buying tickets for the cruises and the mixtape tour.
Footage of New Kids on the Block performing.
The best way to describe our second incarnation is kind of like when an athlete becomes a veteran.
Now we'll never forget when Kevin came back. We were at Staples Center, and he came up on I Want It That Way. And I've never heard screams so piercing. I had to pull my in-ears out. And he just stood there. And I'm like, yeah, you take it in, buddy. Take that shit in. And then we went back in the studio. It's generational. I'm like, you see our last tour, you're seeing 5-year-olds to 85-year-olds. Fans are an extension of you because you are making a personal connection. Through music, you lock eyes and that's a moment.
DMA 2023.
Make some noise for NSYNC.
You guys are pop personified. Like,
I had your dolls.
When the five of us are together, it's almost like the world disappears for a second and we get to go back to that time.
And to see them back on stage performing together again after 11 years, that was so great.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are NSYNC.
It's a beautiful thing about music. It takes you back to where you were. It takes you back to the things you were feeling. There's a desire to feel good. There's a desire to revisit those moments that were happy and more carefree.
It's a childhood memory, and it's something to be proud of. Boy band music is so powerful because it keeps evolving.
Shots of several boy bands are displayed.
I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you, always and forever.
Larger than life, Reign of the Boy Bands. Audio description by Caption Media Group. The final credits are displayed.